Hey everyone, in the following podcast you'll hear the edited audio of Sienna's live Instagram interview with Abdul Shaikh, Artistic Director and Joint CEO of Tara Arts. The interview covers Abdul's entry into the creative industry, the work Tara Arts are planning to do, and a discussion around what the future of live arts could look like. I hope you enjoy.
Great. So for people who haven't heard of Tara Arts or yourself, then you want to just introduce you and what you do as an artist and an artistic director?
Of course. Let me start with Tara. So Tara Arts was set up in 1977. It was in response to the death of a South Asian man in South London, local to, I think, in Wandsworth, actually. And the company was the first black, Asian, ethnically diverse-led company to be set up in the UK. And it's the first, or the only one, that has its own space, which is good, but also equally kind of thinking about it within the context of everything going on is a hugely problematic issue in 2020, that we're the only organisation with a space, which is, a huge issue, actually. But we do have a space in Wandsworth, and so the company is and has made lots of theatre. It's a theatre company, worked across the world with kind of producing high-quality work with grassroots organisations, but also kind of major cultural powerhouses. Tim De Verma, who set the company up, was there until earlier this year. He served as the artistic director for over 40 years. And so me, I'm a theatre director. I was born in Bangladesh. I came to the UK when I was three. I grew up in East London and then moved to Cardiff and Wales to work for National Theatre Wales just under 10 years ago. I did 2 years with them and then spent a year between London and Cardiff doing the Claw Cultural Leadership Programme, and then decided to set up a company here in Wales in response to the lack of representation and a real kind of issue around diversity here. So I decided to set up a company in response to that called FEO, which in Latin means to belong, to become. And FEO is very much about engaging and debating and putting forward action-focused ideas around how we develop a more representative and equal, equitable cultural sector initially, but beyond that, society really. And we do that through kind of creating really provocative, important pieces of work in terms of traditional theatre, in black boxes, or in proscenium arts theatre space, or in the kind of more traditional buildings, and beyond that also, thinking about how we make theatre outside of those spaces, in communities, in found spaces, in a range of different locations, and another part of the company is how we use theatre, drama, the arts to engage and develop and give voice to a range of different individuals, from young people to community members to prisoners. So we work in a range of different settings. So that's kind of what FEO does. And that's all, an amalgamation of who I am and what I do and where my values and ethos lie as an artist. I'm always interested in people. I'm always interested in how we push boundaries of what, where, and how theatre is made. And really importantly, who has access to theatre?
Definitely. So I'm really into exploring the idea of non-traditional theatre and community-based art later in the interview. But before we do that, I'd just love to find out about why you decided to first head into the arts industry. So could you just give us like a little rundown of what it was like at the beginning of your career before you became AD of BO?
Yeah, of course. Quite a funny story, actually. I hadn't been to, I didn't really engage much with the cultural sector such growing up, because I grew up in a single parent family. My mom was on benefits. We didn't have a lot of spare cash to be going to the theatre. But I did go to the library quite a lot with my sister, and we read books. So I always knew I really enjoyed a good story. We'd devour books on a Saturday afternoon, and then bring some back home and keep reading. So that was always kind of there. But in terms of theatre, I was walk. Well, I was in year 10, year 10. And at school, we were getting ready to go on 2 weeks work experience, which the school often, what the school would organise. I was told I had to go to the local vets for 2 weeks, and I'm not really an animal person, so I found it a really weird placement. But I was walking around Stratford trying to figure out a different option. And handing out kind of CVs and asking whether local retail stores would be able to take me on. And I came across Theatre Royal Stratford East, which at the time was being renovated. And I walked in, and there was some there were workmen there who said that the staff weren't around, but if I went to another place, where the temporary offices were, I'd be able to speak to someone there. So I went there and I said, "Look, what do you guys do?" They explained, and I said, "Oh, this sounds really interesting. Could I come and do some work experience at some point?" And they said yes, and that's how I got involved. I decided to go and spend my whole summer that year with them, and I did the youth theatre program there. And then beyond that, I then joined the youth theatre there. I did the Youth Theatre of Great Britain. I was a National Youth Theatre of Great Britain, and then I played with the idea of being an actor and wanting to perform. And I know I loved performing, and I was interested. But I also became a young dad at 21, and I was kind of unsure whether the acting world would be able to sustain me and a child. And I really didn't enjoy the roller coaster that being an actor meant. And so I decided to explore other ideas and options, and career pathways, and directing really felt like a thing that I wanted to do from an early age. And then I always had an eye on the bigger picture, and so I decided to be a director, and I was really lucky. I had some really great opportunities, and here I am. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thanks for sharing that. I just wanted to move on to the show that you're planning to put on at Tara, which is called A Final Farewell. Would you mind just talking us through the premise of A Final Farewell and why it's pertinent in our current situation?
So yeah, The Final Farewell is was inspired, came out of conversations with my partner, who was talking about somebody who'd passed away. An older woman from her church passed away, not because of COVID, but during COVID. And this individual had been the person who welcomed people into the church and was at all the funerals, all the christenings. She was always there. She was part of the church in quite a significant way. And sadly, because she died during COVID, people couldn't go to her funeral, and it was a really sad kind of moment, quite a poignant moment to kind of reflect on what COVID had done to our communities and what it meant to people, well, and what had happened, or how people were being sent off in terms of those who had passed away. And and so we were just talking, and kind of some ideas started to emerge out of that. I always think it's really important to make sure that the work that you make resonates and connects with local communities. With and it's really important to make sure that the stories are derived or have some connection to your community in some way. Yeah, I got thinking, and the final farewell kind of slowly manifested and developed and became this idea that we might be able to collect local stories of people who've passed away, and then through a process of collecting those stories, but also understanding the lives of those individuals, you know, where they went, what parts of Wandsworth they frequented in their everyday life, or because of a particular thing that they might be involved in, or activity, sorry, that they might be involved in. And and the idea came about, and it felt like a really apt kind of project, because I think we are about to come out of, or if the recovery continues, we're about to come out of a really difficult, traumatic moment in the UK, but even, you know, beyond the UK, across the world. And I think this will give us a real opportunity to have some of those conversations, allow people to engage in, one, a debate around what that means, and what the trauma, how the trauma has left them and feeling, and then hopefully through the process of talking about the trauma, grieving, and allowing time to grieve, hopefully that will play a part in kind of the recovery for some people. We appreciate, you know, it's a project that could unlock a lot of emotions for a lot of people, and therefore we need to make sure we support both the people that we collect the stories from, the community that we collect the stories from, but also the audience members who come along. And the project has been designed with a view to kind of thinking about social distancing and how we receive people, and hence the kind of individual walks and people going on, going out and about across Wandsworth. The plan is to bring people together and kind of share, so that they can share their experiences with each other. And we'll see what happens, but I think it's a really important project coming out of this, to really understand where we are in terms of the community and who we are, who's missing now, you know, really look around us and go, who is no longer here.
Yeah, definitely. And sticking with that point of like the catharsis that art can bring after a time of grieving and trauma, as you mentioned, what advice would you share with a young person who may have found a lot of disappointments or grief or loss as a result of COVID-19? What advice would you give them if they wanted to make art or create, whether it's theatre or poetry, like whatever art form it is, what advice would you give them in order to navigate that grief and share that art with the world?
I think we have to stay resilient as a community, as a sector, as people. I think coming out of this, there's going to be lots of change. Lots of change in terms of organisations restructuring, losing people, but equally, hopefully, positive change around kind of looking at some of the problems that existed in our old structure, and taking this opportunity to reset and really utilising this to recreate a more representative sector. And so I think there's those two things to bear in mind. But in terms of advice, I would certainly say stay resilient, stay positive. People need to hear your voice, need to hear your stories. So, it's important to do that. Explore, think about other people that might be able to support you in terms of reaching out and seeing who else is thinking along the same lines as you, thinking about the same things, and make sure you look after yourself as well, actually. That's really important because, we've all been through a really difficult moment. Take your time with it, and really make sure you're looking after your mental well-being and your health.
Definitely. Thank you for that. I'm sure many young people will be encouraged to continue being resilient in this time. And we've actually just had a question on the chat from Tom. So we're going to read it out now. And he asked, will live events and live art see a fundamental shift as a result of COVID? And if so, do you think it is positive? Is it a positive shift or not?
I think live art, live events, we were playing around and testing a range of different ideas prior to COVID. You know, you take the hologram of Tupac and the gig that was done, but it's just as an example on how that happened. And then you look at some of the other technologies that people have been playing around with, thinking about. So I think that was already happening. Personally, I think I don't believe that there's going to be a fundamental shift away from live events in terms of people wanting to gather and wanting to congregate and wanting to be part of something together. I think what we have seen in this last kind of 4 months is acceleration of ideas around how art can exist on online spaces, but equally how art, live art or theatre, live events, performances can utilize digital tools in a more interesting way. I think that's something that certainly was already happening, but I think will be accelerated. I think in terms of moving forward, for me personally, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's really important to make sure that we are engaging with a range of different tools to tell stories. But equally, I think there will always be a need for people to come into a theatre or into a space to share, or into a space to kind of be part of it, as a, into a space, live performance space, sorry, to be part of a shared experience. I think that need won't go away. I think how we make that safe and easy for people to access will be the big thing moving forward.
Awesome, thank you. And I kind of wanted to stick with that point of like how you're working at Tara and your plans for the future, because certainly when I was reading like the recent news articles about your recent appointment at Tara, your model seemed very clear about the way that you plan to work, in the sense that it was community-based and it was from the stories of the community, and you kind of working with that, especially in shows like A Final Farewell. And I just wondered, do you think that's a model that like isn't seen enough in arts organisations, in the sense of like starting at the community and working up from that? And why is that particularly relevant to the work that you do at Tara Arts?
Well, I think what's been interesting is a lot of arts organisations have relied on their outreach community education departments to stay relevant during this period because, the work or the people that they engage were mainly through through the projects that those departments delivered. For me, absolutely, you know, that's quite central in terms of how I think and what my ethos and values are. But certainly, it's not to say that we won't be creating work, professional work, and thinking about, you know, a season of work which will respond to a range of different issues, not necessarily just coming from the community, but also thinking about commissioning writers and directors and other creatives to make work for us that we think need to be made. But coming out of this particular point in time, I think there is a significant need, for us to listen to our communities, but equally not just our communities, in terms of the individuals that can live around our building and who are part of that immediate community, I guess, but also, the artistic community and the people who have been really affected by COVID in a way that they wouldn't have foreseen, and it's been a real shock to the system for a lot of people, but equally a real shock to the sector. And I think there's a real need for us to understand, from an organizational point of view and from a sector point of view, how we can best support those individuals. And again, thinking about the mental health, their well-being aspect, and not just from an economic perspective, because of course lots of freelancers are going to struggle economically, and I appreciate and understand that, but equally, how can we support beyond that and also make sure that we are doing our best to provide that, provide that the things that they may need maybe coming out of this. I think for us it's going to be a range of different kind of things to be thinking about, whether that's and I think I explained that in my article and in terms of my thinking. And we will be announcing kind of future work in due course, but this is where we're initially going in, or this is the perspective we want to take in the immediate future.
Definitely. I think it's a super healthy perspective for many organizations to look at and consider how they can also work in the same in a similar way as you are. And we've just had another question, which is kind of on the same theme of live events from Tom, and he asks, do we run the risk of creating two classes of live event, the digital and the in-person, with the latter only being accessible to the stereotypical white middle class artist and audience?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he. I'm not sure. No, I don't think so, because I think we also have, challenges of making sure when we're doing digital work online projects, because of data poverty, not everyone, not it doesn't necessarily mean that we are reaching everyone because it's online. So there's still work to be done around that. And equally, there's lots of work to be done around in real life live events and performances, which is something that Tara has been doing and will continue to do in terms of attracting a new audience, developing new artists, making sure that the stories being told resonate for a variety of different communities, which in turn hopefully will mean that they will come to our events. I think we have to obviously also take into account COVID recovery and think about who can come to our events. I'm in the process of making a show at the moment, which will go into production next spring. It's about the Somali Civil War, but because of the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on Black, Asian, ethnically diverse communities, we have to be really careful about inviting those communities into a space and making sure that it is safe and we are looking after them and we have their health as a top priority. So it's all of that thinking that needs to take place. So I'm not I don't yeah I think we have people say we're already with the latter where performances, live performances, are often only accessible to white middle class audiences. But I think lots of people are doing really great work around that, and we just need to continue to do that work and really develop a range of different audiences and ideas around how we can increase access.
Definitely. And that's actually a really good lead on to my next question, which is all about accessibility, not just in live events, but in the arts industry in general. And I'm curious from your experience working at FIO and obviously now recently at Tara, what do you see as the biggest barrier that is preventing greater diversity and accessibility for people getting into the arts industry and also, as we mentioned, audiences participating in art as well?
I think there's multiple barriers. I think, for example, at the moment, I know that there's going to be a huge drain of talent because people just can't survive the economic challenge of COVID. I think a lot of Black, Asian, ethnically diverse freelancers, freelancers who identify as being disabled, often are working, often are not working within organisations, and therefore, coming out of this, they will be, highly affected. And if they can't pay their rent, and if they can't put food on the table, then how can we expect them to stay in the arts and continue? And so the economic barriers is huge, absolutely. And I think, even working class artists and audiences, I think the first thing you need to do is make sure you survive, and then beyond that we need to explore beyond that you can then think about whether you want to obviously go and see a theatre show or be part of a creative project. So I think finance is a huge thing. I think beyond that, just not seeing enough of yourself in a place or on a stage, or I think that has a huge, huge impact. If the stories that we see don't reflect or resonate your life, your experience, your reality, it kind of gets to a point where you just can't be bothered, right? Why would you keep wanting to go and see that? And actually, when you've got Netflix and you've got, some great TV and film being made at the moment, which is slightly more representative, then it's highly likely that you'd want to engage in that, or other kind of creative outlets that allow you to do that. Whether that's music or other outlets, but yeah. So I think it's the biggest barrier for arts is definitely financial and also representation. I think it's those are the two things that really need to be looked at.
Definitely, thank you. I appreciate your insight on that. And I just have one more question for you today. And it's really, where can everyone who is watching and they want to find out more and maybe get involved with the work that you're doing, where can they find you and find Tara Art to get in touch?
Of course. Keep an eye on our website, on our socials, Tara_Art. In terms of Instagram, it's Tara Art, all one word. Sorry, the other one was Twitter. And we're on Facebook as well. Tara Arts. I'm just trying to remember, and obviously we've got our website, and I think there's a YouTube channel, Tara Theatre. In terms of getting in touch with me, Twitter, Abdul_Shayek, so that's Shayek, and people can email. It's quite simple, Abdul@tara-arts.com. Receptive to receiving emails, and I'll do my best to respond to as many as possible. So people can connect in all of those ways, and I'm really open to connecting and listening and seeing where the conversations go.
Wonderful, thank you so much. I've really appreciated the conversation and learned a lot about the exciting work that Tara Arts are going to be doing. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you like this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work in Computech.com. Tom Innes was the executive producer.